Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our weekly conservative talk. I'm Just Plain Bill.
And I'm Tracy Coyle.
And good evening to all of you. It is a gorgeously cloudy, rainy, snowy day here in Northern California.
And it is a bright, sunny, warm, and breezy day here in Southern California.
Oh, man, you guys get all the luck down there. Doggone it. So how are you enjoying your vacation here?
We're doing a very nice time. We've been on the beach at sundown every night except for tonight because, of course, I'm having to do this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be out and enjoying the sunset again on the beach. And as a matter of fact, we're going to let you – I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on with you tonight so that we can actually go out to get some dinner.
Oh, hey,
we've
there
been
you
out
go.
Wandering around all day today, so.
Yeah.
Time for a little bit of dinner and relaxation in the hotel room.
All right.
So I've actually been out of touch politically and otherwise for the last several days since, I mean, we left on Friday, so I haven't been paying much attention. Apparently, you know, Michael Steele went to a lesbian show, or you know, he bought a $7 million, you know, $1,000. I don't know what's going on out there, but you know, I walk away for a few minutes and the whole Republican Party implodes or something. I don't know.
I'm just absolutely goes crazy. You know, it turns out it was an RNC staffer that picked up the tab for what was apparently an off-hours kind of a thing. And, you know, the stupid dummy used his party credit card instead of his own or whatever it was. And he got fired over it. You know, pardon?
As rightly he should.
Well, sure. If he can't tell the difference between credit cards, he probably ought not to be wherever he was. You know, I'm not sure Michael Steele is the guy. But notwithstanding that, is anybody going to seriously try to tell me that the Dems haven't done the same thing? I mean, that's ludicrous on its face.
They built into the budget for that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. You know, the other point, and somebody made it on Twitter, it's like, well, gosh, if you oppose BHO's policies, you're a racist, so if you oppose Michael Steele, does that make you a racist too? It's like, yeah, there's that old double standard again. You betcha, Red Ryder. It's there.
And apparently Sarah over the weekend was talking about gun shows or, you know, pointing a trigger at, you know, some DNC people. I don't know. I don't know.
Reloading or something.
For 9 days,
mm-hmm.
I'm disconnected.
Well, there are numerous examples. I mean, here's the latest. A guy who donated twice to Barack Hussein Obama is charged and indicted with threatening the life of Representative Eric Cantor, who, gosh, happens to be a GOP congressman, right?
Right.
Over the weekend, some folks called Huttery Christians, whoever that might be, never heard of them before in my life,
Are this the Michigan militia people?
Yeah. They're okay. Huttery Christians. Huttarree, I think.
I think the correct pronunciation is utterly not Christian.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the point. Tonight, CBS leads with, oh, these right-wing militia Christian groups. ABC leads with, oh, these right-wing militia Christian groups. All of this hate and rhetoric. What do they say about Eric Cantor and his potential assailant? Absolutely nothing. Not a word. Now, I don't know whether the Stone family, who are apparently the Huttery Christians, actually did anything wrong. I mean, did they talk? I don't know. Maybe. That will get proven in a court of law, as will the charges against the guy that threatened Eric Cantor. The point is that you can't, on the one hand, say, oh, all of this hate and racist and divisive speech only comes from the right, because that isn't true. It
right.
simply is not true. And
easy to smear one side and excuse the other.
Yeah.
And I'll be perfectly
honest.
You need to be perfectly honest. We need to be perfectly honest. We do it on our side, too, although I like to believe that most of us in ACP and associated groups and people that we hang around with are considerably less, you know.
Yeah. These court cases will work themselves out. And at the time that
All right.
get a conviction or you don't get a conviction will be the time to say, oh, okay, there's something to that. But until then, it is really irresponsible to be trying to broad brush a particular movement with anybody's adherence. Now, there's no evidence that these people are Tea Party involved. There is no evidence that they actually tried to do something. And yet, they have been convicted, tried and convicted in the court of public opinion, that they're guilty, and by association, the Tea Partiers are guilty. How does this benefit Obama? Well, that's really easy. He gets health care off the front lines. He gets his recess appointments off the front lines. He gets Eric Cantor's threats off of the front lines. And all of a sudden, what we're talking about is, oh, these evil, wicked, mean, bad, and nasty Tea Partiers. Just doesn't make sense.
We need to figure a way of undoing some of that ability
yep.
to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And part
mm-hmm.
of it is to make. And this is my opinion, is part of it is to make, part of it is to be, snicker-oriented towards,
yeah.
anybody that suggests that, is to
yep.
laugh at them and go, ah, I see you've taken the bozo, the line.
Yeah. Exactly.
Ridicule them for even attempting that. All right.
Yeah. Cool.
Have fun.
Okay.
You're going to take off
and go to the beach, are you?
I'm going to take off, go get some dinner, and we'll talk to you on next week, and we'll big rundown on all the things we did on vacation, what
Super.
I did on my spring break.
All righty. Have a really great one, Trace.
Night, everybody.
Night. Cool. All righty. Well, Tracy did, in fact, call in. Kind of surprised me. So, moving on. When is something not a bug but a feature? And the answer to that is when you have a health care bill that purports, doesn't actually, but purports to cover children with pre-existing conditions, everybody else in 2014, when you have a health care bill that purports to be a boon for insurers, because obviously they're going to be getting all of these new insured. And when you have a health care bill that purports to have some kind of enforcement mechanism to force people to sign up, and it doesn't. Now, how is that a feature, not a bug? Well, in my mind, that's pretty easy. When all of those things happen, and by the way, you have major companies that are announcing big hits to their capital accounts, and you have that courtesy of the Oxbane-Sarkley Act, which says, gosh, you folks need to inform your shareholders that anything that affects your balance sheet, you must, under penalty of law, you must report that immediately. So what happens? IBM takes a $1 billion charge. Caterpillar takes a $100 million charge. So far, when you add them all up, it's $14 billion so far. And I think we're still counting. So, they have been called on the carpet by Waxman. By the way, support his opponent. Get out there, kick a couple of bucks into his campaign account. We need to get that fool out of here. He's going to call them to the Capitol and testify because their numbers don't jibe with the government's. Gosh, how could that ever be? I mean, who in the world would ever think that the government's numbers were infallible and they must have some really shady accounting practices? But nevertheless, they're going to be called on the carpet. Now, back to our insurance companies. Our insurance companies are saying, well, gosh, you know, as we read the legislation, there isn't any provision that says we have to cover children with pre-existing conditions as long as we don't write coverage for children with pre-existing conditions. All of a sudden, the Democrats are hollering foul. They're saying, well, that wasn't the spirit that we intended. So you have a 2,000-plus page bill that they didn't read, that they didn't vet properly, that they voted on and passed, and now they're finding out that, oh gosh, we have a problem. And the problem is, because they didn't vet it, because they didn't read it, and because they passed it, it's not doing what they said it was going to do. Here's what it will do, though. What it will do is bankrupt the insurers, because they will fix the no pre-existing condition thing. They will fix that. They may do it regulatorily. They may do it a whole different lot of different ways, but they will, in fact, fix that. When they do, they're going to have to raise premiums. So what happens if they raise premiums? Oh, well, the government is going to say, oh, you greedy bastards. You have raised premiums on all of these poor people that can't afford coverage, and we're going to punish you. And they will bankrupt the insurance companies. Now, why is that a feature, not a bug? That is a feature because if the insurance companies go bankrupt, who else is there to provide care? Got to be the government. Got to be. So all of a sudden, we get insurance companies are bankrupt, have to raise their premiums, can't raise their premiums because of regulation, and all of a sudden now, they're gone, or at least unable to write insurance, and who can step in? The government under single payer. And if you thought health care was a bad deal before, it's a worse deal under single payer health care. If you look at what happens in England, if you look at what happens in France, if you look at what happens wherever that has been in place for any period of time at all, what you find out is quality of care goes down. There's a news story about a guy with cancer in the hospital in England that had to call the front desk for a drink of water. Now, that's horrible. That's terrible. How can anybody say, oh, yeah, we're giving them adequate care? I mean, that just isn't there. You just can't get from here to there. And so once we get to that, and the government is providing your health care, you have longer waiting times. And right now, if I had to go get an MRI, I could be in there in 4 days. If I have to have an MRI in Canada or London or any other place that they've got health care, what happens? I got a 14-month wait, unless I want to go to the U.S. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. The U.S. doesn't have that anymore. All of a sudden, we are under that same kind of a system. You can't get there from here. It doesn't work. So that's a feature, not a bug. And we will, in fact, at some point in time, assuming that we don't get this thing either repealed or whatever has to happen, then, okay, if we can get it repealed, yeah, we've got another lease on life. If we don't get it repealed, then that's the future that we have in store for us. So, I want to switch topics here for a minute, because there was some economics news that was in the news today, and it was on Powerline. And they talked about other than what they've got right here. Let me get to it. Dang it! Come on. Where in the world? I'm sorry. I'm having to scroll through a whole bunch of stuff here. To find out, here we go. No, not yet. We're still scrolling here. That was the whole thing. Well, not finding it. Apparently, they pulled that out of there. But the gist of the story was that there was a Bureau of Economic Analysis that was done. And under that analysis, there was a from 1998 to 2008, there was a the economy grew at a 28.6% rate. The problem is that, according to the Wall Street Journal, there is a 45% premium increase that's coming for health care. Now, that's how I tie those two together. So I'm looking at that and saying, wait a minute, if you're saying we grew at 28.6% and the premium increases are going to be 45%, we got a problem. Now, in that same article, they talked about what the government employment was doing. And guess what? Over that same period of time, the premium for a government job was 45%. Now, those are really coincidental kinds of numbers. But the fact is that you have government employment that covers almost all of the jobs if you take them in total, have a 45% premium over their private sector jobs. So if that's true, and I have no reason to doubt their numbers, but if that is true, then we're overpaying labor, which is the biggest component of government, by 45%. Now, 45% of our labor costs in government is a huge number. I mean, that's a really, really big number. So how come we have that kind of a premium for that labor? And I will assume for purposes of my argument that we're comparing apples to apples. We're talking about a clerk in the private sector to a clerk in the public sector. We're talking about a manager in the private sector to a manager in the public sector. If all of those things added together, and if in fact they're comparing equals, it's a 45% premium, and that is a huge thing. And incidentally, if you want to talk about this, you can call in. Our number is 1-646-652-2828, and we have some open lines here. So, excuse me. That's kind of where we are with that. I am appalled that we have that kind of a disparity between public and private wages. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. When you look at the states, those states that are in the most severe trouble, those states that are showing worse signs of deterioration credit-wise, are those states that have the highest incidence of unsustainable public pensions. Now, the cost per employee on a straight, what do you pay them per hour, probably isn't bad. But when you have firemen making $170,000 a year, when you have police, upper levels of police administration making $212,000 a year, and when their retirements are based on their highest salary of the last year that they worked, and they get those regardless of how much they get in Social Security, that's bad news. That is not sustainable, because they're going to get paid that for the rest of their lives and for their spouses' wives. So you need to stop and think about, what does our government, both at the local level and at the federal level, what do they promise their retirees? And you need to look at those costs, because those are the costs that will kill you, because those are the ones that are ongoing in addition to whatever your public employee hire costs are right now. It doesn't matter what it is right now. What matters is, what did you promise them in the future? Now, a city here in California recently went through bankruptcy. And I got to tell you, I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the city. I think it was Vallejo, but it might have been a different city. It was in that neck of the woods. They recently went through bankruptcy. The bankruptcy court and all of the private advisors said, the problem is you have an unsustainable retirement system. Unsustainable retirement system. What does that mean? It means they went through bankruptcy, and even though they went through bankruptcy, they did not cut those contracts. They did not cut those retirement benefits. So they told their citizens, essentially what they did is they told their citizens, you will continue to pay your taxes. We're going to have to increase those taxes. And by the way, we're not going to cut. We are not going to break those contracts, as they have every right to do in that bankruptcy court proceedings. They're going to say, oh, no. No, no. You have to continue to pay the taxes that will support that. At some point in time, that becomes unsustainable. And boy, are we getting close to that. And what happens is this. If it in fact is unsustainable, if in fact we get to a point where there is no cash, there's no cash left to pay this, they've cut all of the services that they can cut and there's still no cash available, they are going to have to default on those. And what happens when they default? Should the state pick it up? State's not going to be able to, not here in California. They're already in the hole. Well, perhaps the federal government will pick it up. I'm sorry, they're so far in the hole that they can't even see what direction is up. Who was it? Colonel Oliver North, said something along the lines of, he's so far underwater, sonar can't find him. Now, what does that mean? I mean, the Chinese are not going to continue to lend to us if we still have that kind of a structural problem. They may not continue to lend to us anyway. They're looking to get out of dollar-denominated currencies and dollar-denominated debt instruments. So what do? Well, they go someplace else. Now, they probably aren't going to Greece or Italy or someplace like that. They may, in fact, invest at home. They have a big enough population they could do that. What does that mean to the U.S.? It means that our interest rates go up exponentially. Well, maybe not exponentially, but they will go up. If they go up, debt service takes a larger and larger portion of the federal budget. What does that mean? What that means is we continue to pay that, and then we continue to print money, which means that we're going to have inflation. So, buckle up, kiddies. It's going to be a rough ride from here on out. I don't know where we're going to go from here, but I'll tell you this. I don't think that I personally want to invest in any United States debt instruments. For one thing, we're on the wrong end of the cycle because the price of a bond goes down as the interest rates go up. And the only place interest rates can go up right now, that's called an inverse relationship. The only place that interest rates can go from here on out are up because we're at effectively a zero rate, at least at short term. Long term, you already see that starting to happen. The 10-year bond went up 50 basis points. Well, that's a 0.5%. Well, gosh, Bill, 0.5% isn't much. No, it isn't. But that's just on one, that maturity. And you don't know what it's going to do next week. That will continue to accelerate. So interest rates are going to go up, bond values are going to fall, and the United States doesn't have the cash to pay. We aren't going to be able to get borrowers, or at least not very many of them. And so then you have inflation, because that's the only other way that the United States has to get out of its debt obligations, is to inflate them away. The problem is, that hurts us here. That absolutely kills us. I don't know about anybody else. I'm retired. That means I live on a fixed income. Now, am I doing okay? Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm not liking the premium rate increases that are coming along now for my health insurance. Not any fault of mine. I'm healthy, but they're there, and there's more of them coming, but I'm okay. But there's a lot of people that aren't. and inflation will eat away at their buying power. They don't have earning power anymore. They do have buying power, and that's going to get eaten up. It's going to get eaten up because of inflation. So we have massive unemployment. We are moving into a high inflation rate environment. And gosh, that sounds a whole lot like Jimmy Carter, doesn't it? Anybody remember that? Anybody remember the gas lines? Anybody remember the unemployment that we have then? And that doesn't even begin to touch what we have right now. Everybody remember what the interest rates did then? At one point in time, prime rate, that's the rate that banks lend to their most creditworthy customers, was 21.5%. That's insane. Nobody can live with those kinds of rates. That is a direct result, an absolutely direct result of inflation. So, I don't know where we go from here. I am not a big fan of just parking my money and leaving it someplace. On the other hand, I really don't know what to do at this point. I'm really kind of up in the air, and I'm sitting here saying, "Boy, I hope somebody's got an answer to it, because you know what? I don't, and I'm thinking a whole lot of people out there in America don't have an answer to that either. So, if we want to move on, we can. The question then becomes, if that is a hang on, I got a caller here. Let's find out who this is. Oops. Nope. Hello, caller? Nope. Guess they hung up. Well, I don't have a caller. Dang. Alrighty. So if I hung up on you somehow because I didn't know how to work the switchboard, give me a call back. I will try my best not to do that to you again. In other news, John McCain says we must deploy troops to patrol the border. Does anybody remember 2 years ago? I think it was 2 years ago. It was in the summertime. I remember it pretty well because I was sitting here at the computer getting on various websites and talking about, oh gosh, they're talking about amnesty. And we need to cut that down. And that came really close to being an actual occurrence. One of the chief proponents of that was John McCain. This is back when Bush is still in power. He was in the last year of his presidency. I'm going to take a run at this. So now John McCain says we must deploy troops to patrol the border. This is from the guy who was all in favor of amnesty 2 years ago. And I'm sitting here shaking my head saying, you know, John, I thank you for your service. I mean, he had an honorable career in the United States Navy. Absolutely honorable. He was a POW for 6-plus years. He underwent actual physical torture. Not this phony baloney stuff that the left would have you believe is torture. Actual physical torture, to the point that he finds it very difficult to use a computer today. I honor that service. It is time for John McCain to retire. He needs to get out of the public life. He needs to say, you know what, it's been a really great run. I am proud to have served, but it's time for me to go away. It's time for me to say, I've given what I can give. I can't give anymore. We'll see if that happens. I kind of think it won't, but we'll see. Oh yeah, back on to healthcare. All of you young people that voted for Barack Obama, you know what? You're going to see a 17% increase in your premiums under Obamacare. Gosh, I hope you guys like that. I'm going to like it a lot from my point of view, being an oldster. You folks probably aren't going to like that a whole lot because, you see, they can't charge me a whole lot more than what they charge you. So you guys get to subsidize me a little bit. Thank you very much. I'm certainly appreciating that. Although, you know what? If we had an actual, a really, truly conservative government, government wouldn't be in health care. Actually, there's a lot of things that it wouldn't be. Hang on. Got a caller. I'm going to see if it's still here. Caller, are you here? Who are you and what's your name?
I am.
Oh,
hello?
It is just me, Pammy. I hung up
it's
on you before.
It's just me, Pammy.
I am sorry. Gosh, I'm
Hi,
sorry.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Pammy.
Hi.
So what's going on in your neck of the woods, in the Royal Woodlands?
Oh, in my Royal Woodlands. Oh, boy, I'll tell you what. You're talking percentages. Now, you know I am not a banker. I'm
okay.
Just a fiend.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but I'll tell you what. I saw on the television the other day that the price of my glorious tomatoes are going up 300-400%.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Green peppers.
Yeah.
300-400%. Watermelon, 800%. Now this is cash money out of the pocket to the farmer market.
Uh huh.
That has nothing. It's crazy.
I'll be darned.
I hadn't heard that yet,
and I haven't noticed it in our supermarkets yet.
Oh
well,
boy, I'm telling you.
But I'm at this point I would think that. Most of those kinds of vegetables are coming from Mexico and places south. I mean,
well,
that'd be my guess.
That might be my guess, too, but I'll tell you what. This year, they're coming right out of my yard.
Are you going to plant a big garden?
Well, sure. My garden plot, yeah, if I get no snow.
Yeah, right. we had some snow here today.
Did you?
In fact, it may even be snowing again right now. I don't know.
You're kidding. It was a beautiful day here.
Well, you know what? It was not here. I woke up to about 3/4 of an inch of rain in my rain gauge. And it was kind of semi-snowing then. And then after a while, it slacked off. And then it really started snowing. In fact, it snowed probably maybe 1/4 of an inch, and then it all melted off. And then it's been off and on snowing since then, and right now it's snowing again, and I got snow sticking on my roof.
Oh, burr, I might have to get a hat.
Yeah, there you go. Wear a hat. Keep yourself
warm. Wear a hat. Well, I'll tell you, when I saw the price of produce expected increase in percentages the other day, this
uh-huh.
was maybe 3 days ago,
uh-huh.
I flipped. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
It's hard enough to put groceries on the table. You know, you were discussing the limited income. Okay,
yep.
Now, if you offset, well, no, there's no way you can offset it, but if you eliminate what you would spend on produce or, fresh greenery, opposed to what this, increase in your insurance is going to be, and we're all going to be farming again.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of truth in that. I mean, I'm not really quite old enough to remember the Victory Gardens in World War II,
I'm not either. I'm a young thing.
But you know what? There was a lot of wisdom in that. I mean, people can grow vegetables like nobody's business if they simply put their mind to it. In fact, I recall that at one point in time, at least in Russia, and this was prior to Gorbachev. Prior to Gorbachev. And private garden plots. And remember that they were collectivized farms at that point in time. But you were allowed private garden plots. And those private garden plots provided better than 70% of the fresh vegetables to the Russian market.
Wouldn't surprise me any. You know, I mean, you know, of course, I'm in Kentucky, so,
yep. You
know, here people are really concerned. You know, I've talked with a few people in, you know, the cities in California, and they're all worried about, you know, gas for their Porsche. Okay, fine.
You want
to shop the mall, you do your thing. But out here, people are worried about, you know, chickens and eggs and tomatoes and,
yep. You
know, where we're going to get this and, you know, what happens when, you know, if we do plant our own gardens, you know, which, you know, it's just subsidized, you know, we all have to shop. But, you know, I mean, where are the 1,000 people that are going to show up with guns to take our garden from us? You know,
they're even worried
about that here.
Yeah, you know.
Anymore, it's not an unreasonable concern.
Those folks live in the city, and if they can find their way to the country, I suppose that could happen.
I highly doubt it.
You know, I like the idea of folks growing their own vegetables. I truly do. We have a friend of ours here in Hayfork, little bitty old Hayfork here, up in Northern California. And she raises, she's got a milking cow. and in fact, we get milk from her.
The cow.
She has 100 plus chickens. And she sells eggs. She has turkeys.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. She's in a little bit of a predicament because she really needs a tom that can breed. And unfortunately, the domestic varieties can't because they're so chest heavy that they can't actually do the deed.
Right.
So what she needs is like a wild tom, and of course they're protected, so you can't get one of those. In any event, they've got all kinds of stuff that they do. They raise calves for beef, and they're probably as close to self-sufficient as you can get, plus having enough excess to actually sell.
Yes.
And that's what people ought to be striving for.
Now, well, they are out here.
They do all that on something like about 5 acres.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
wow.
So, yeah, folks, it's doable.
Yeah,
you can
it
do
is.
It. You just.
Well, my little castle sits on a third of an acre, and I'll tell you what, I've ripped up a whole corner of my yard just to plant.
Yeah.
You know, lettuce and tomato and peppers and onions, and,
yep. You
know, I'm trying to figure out if I've got room in the back on the hill for a cornfield.
Hey,
you know,
can you grow zucchini there?
Oh, sweetie, I can grow anything. You know, that little genius princess of mine has a green thumb.
Ah, there you go. You ought to get her to grow in zucchini. You could supply the world with
zucchini.
Yeah,
you want some zucchini?
There you go. Yeah,
the only thing I really
like zucchini bread.
I can't get them to grow Brussels sprouts. That's the whole thing. They don't want nothing to do with those little things.
Is that right? Gosh,
yeah,
how about broccoli?
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I set some seeds to start for that already.
Cool. That's
good. Yeah.
Yeah,
because it'll go really good in the salad in the summer when, you know, I'm sitting there sweltering in the heat in that rocking chair going, mm-mm, wish it was winter because I keep getting reminded about that part.
I'm just hoping folks will take it seriously, that they will in fact start growing some of their own food. Doesn't have to be all of it.
I have a friend out in the desert, and he was complaining, you know, it's like, you know, look, I'm in the desert, you know, and I said, so? Hello, go to the, you know, go get some containers, you know, get some decent soil, you know, get yourself some fertilizer and some seed. You know, you can at least get, you know, tomatoes and onions and lettuce out of that.
Absolutely.
You know, he said, you know, I never did think of it,
sure.
You know, and I thought, well, gee, you know.
And if you combine all of that with drip irrigation, you're not even going to use a whole lot of water.
This is what I told him, too.
Yep.
You know, I said, you know, you can collect whatever falls from the sky, you know, if you're that far out in the desert, and recycle this water for you to have, you know, water for your plants.
There you go.
And it's like anything else that you're going to plant, you know, just have it, you know, set up the way that it needs to be so that it will thrive and produce for you.
Absolutely.
And I was born in the city, okay? My mother had this little farm. We called it the farm. She was born on a farm.
All right.
And Oh, my God. You should see her. She would go out in her yard and pick dandelions in the city.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And she did. And I would go, good grief, what are you doing? You know, that's a hard thing to weed, Mom, you know. And she goes, I'm not weeding. She says, I'm in the mood for some dandelion salad. And I thought, oh, gee, you know, the main highway is going by her house.
Yeah, right.
You know, she's
five minutes
from downtown, and this woman is picking dandelions from her yard.
Yep.
And I thought, gee, I know where the corn comes from, you know, the farm. But I never imagined.
And that brings up a really good point. There are a lot of natural foods out there.
True.
That people can eat.
True.
And when they first try them, they don't much care for them, but that's because they educated their tongue.
Exactly.
Instead of saying, well, okay, this will give me vitamin C, or this will give me this, or this will give me that, they say, oh, that doesn't taste like my iceberg lettuce, or that doesn't taste like my whatever.
Yeah,
like,
your gourmet.
Yeah, okay, so doesn't matter.
She did. She would fill a basket full of dandelions, and I thought the woman was out of her mind. And
exactly.
She would take a bit of bacon grease, stick that into the hot, you know, iron skillet, let it just get so, you know, flip a thing of water in it, toss those puppies in when they were washed, and this woman went to town.
Yep, absolutely.
And I thought, you know.
And if you stop and think about it, it is, in fact, the conservative thing to do.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Lucky for me, I was born conservative. I didn't have to think about it. You know, I didn't have to think about being born a Christian conservative. I landed in that spot.
Yeah,
thank God.
There you go.
I do relate to people who have a struggle.
Yep.
You know,
over their
politics or their religion.
Yeah. All I'm saying is this: if you value your independence, if you value your freedom, if you value your liberty, you will do whatever you can to take yourself out of that system.
Exactly.
Now, yes, we have to interact with it in some places. I have to have insurance on my car. Yes, I do. I don't like it, but I do.
Exactly. I'm grateful
but
for
I
that.
But I don't have to buy my salad fixings from the store.
Right.
I don't have to buy my beef from the store. I can buy it from somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of things that we can do as conservatives that say, you know what, I need to back out of this system some.
Yeah, there's another way.
I need to have a big hold on me.
Right, and a lot of it is just, you know, being frugal or pragmatic. You know, you can think of an alternative that doesn't, you know, drag you out to the mall and have you, you know, rack up your credit card to where you can't pay it back in 6 months. And, you know, you can actually tell your children, no, honey, I'm sorry. We cannot afford this.
That's exactly
right.
You
know,
that's exactly right.
I mean, even, you know, now I do have a princess. She's pretty reasonably, you know, decent about learning that, you know, some things she cannot have. Okay, she's not getting an iPad. It's not happening.
Yep.
Okay, but, you know, she did pull straight A pluses, I'm going to brag, and she did get an iPod for her birthday.
Hey, there you go.
That's her. She doesn't own a computer. She uses mine. You know, she has, you know, very, very limited electronic resources at her disposal, you know, where she doesn't have to borrow from someone. You know, she has that at school. She has that at home. But, you know, even that is a struggle to keep her, you know, in the zone, is I guess how the kids would put it. You know, I didn't have that kind of thing. There was one television in my house.
Yeah, well, and it got three channels, right?
Three channels.
There you go.
Oh, I was so glad for public television, bite my tongue.
Man.
You know, it had cartoons, you know. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, a lot of the things that we're doing now is what my parents did growing, you know, with me growing up.
Sure.
You know, learn to tell your children no.
Yeah.
You know, learn that, you know, what's in your pocketbook doesn't necessarily always have to be all spent. You know, turn out the extra lights. Now, I'm not touting the green movement, which I really kind of,
like Earth Hour.
You know, I'm not, I don't want to be pegged out there as, oh, gee, just me, Tammy. She's the liberal green lady. No, I am not. Okay, you know, the other day at Earth Hour, I left every light in my house on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I mean, I really did do that for a statement. I'll pay for it with the electric bill.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Okay, but that was a choice. and it amazes me, you know, when I hear people, you know, we have to go out to eat, we have to, you know, run to the mall and get this, you know, and she wants that, and she wants this, and I'm thinking, but what does this child need?
Mm-hmm.
The love and guidance of your parents, for one.
You know, so some of the best books that I've ever read are some of the old Foxfire books, and I don't know if folks remember those or not, but they were books that were put out. They were put out by a particular class in school, and they came out of Appalachia. And they were filled with the wisdom of those people's elders.
When you
read through it, they were all common sense kinds of things.
Yes.
That said, here's how you can do this without depending on somebody else to do it. Tracy likes to make the point, gosh, she would like to find 100 acres and 10 families.
Bless her heart. Yeah.
And you know, I'm you know, she's not saying that, but it really is kind of like one of the old communes.
Yeah, I understand her desire, you know.
But it's that same thing about there's a division of labor.
Yes.
You get folks that can farm, you get folks that can work horses, you get folks that can raise beef, you get folks that can do all of these kinds of things.
Well, long ago we called it a family, Bill.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
you know,
unfortunately, it's taken a little. I mean, you know, we've gotten away
from the
big families that we used to have.
Right.
And so now we're kind of dependent on people that think like us.
Yes, hopefully.
Say, okay, what do you do? How do you do that? The other idea she had was, hey, could 100 families get together and hire a doctor?
Huh. Well, tell you what, I live in a Mennonite community. You know,
uh-huh.
I know everyone has heard about this, you know, Campbellsville crash where the whole family was killed. And, you know, and they need donations. Anybody who's listening, you know, on Twitter, you'll find, you know, an occasional link, you know, that I do put out. We're trying to get an email address so that the local newspaper there can, you know, provide, you know, an address for checks to be sent.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, you know, but these are the most wonderful people, and they do exactly that.
Exactly.
They negotiate in cash their health care needs.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and they use it as a community. You know, the young woman, she gets married. She has a baby. They build her a barn. The community does that. They do it all day. You know, they have a picnic. Everybody eats. The children play. The men work. The women clean up. The sun goes down. Everyone goes to bed.
There you go.
They're all up again at 3:30 in the morning doing the next thing that they must do. Okay, now this is very fine living for these people, you know, and you know, when I was growing up back in Ohio, of course, I had access to the Amish country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's very same thing. You know, it's all basic stuff. You know, there's family, there's country, there's community, there's God, there's work, there's play, there's rest, there's food. It's simple.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And all of this stuff has complicated living.
We have gotten really complicated.
Extremely complicated.
And it doesn't,
you know,
need to
and,
be that way.
And even from the time now, you know, from when I was a teenager, I never thought of having my own car at the age of 16.
Yep.
I had to graduate high school for that.
Yep.
You know, my parents wanted to see a diploma. I was lucky I got a used car.
Yeah.
Really, I drove a 72 5-speed on the floor Ford Pinto. I love that thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I worked for it.
I had a car,
but I bought it myself, and it was an old Model A. And by golly, it certainly got me along. And
oh, I bet you still wish you had that one.
Oh man, do I wish I still had that.
Oh man,
so
I could see you popping around.
That's funny. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
but I loved my car because I worked for it.
Yep.
You know, not only did I have, you know, a supplemental job in including going to school. I was so busy. I was so tired. I didn't have time to get in trouble.
Mhm. Mhm.
You know, but boy, I'll tell you, the week I graduated high school, you know, my father drove that car to my house and handed me the keys. It didn't matter that it used to be my stepmother's car and she got a new one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it doesn't matter a bit.
But the point was, you know, I worked for it.
Yes.
You know, I was a good kid. I didn't, you know, create trouble. I didn't go out and, you know, be involved in flash mobs and, you know, all this other crazy stuff that these kids do. You know, it's a different world. And, you know, when you were talking about how you didn't know what to do and how you were hoping someone had answers, I sure wish I had that.
Well, you know,
an answer.
Part of the answer is we provide way too much in terms of material goods.
True.
And not enough in terms of living skills.
That's true, too.
You
know, every girl should learn, okay, you know, I'm not going to get into any kind of sexist argument because, you know, I'm not like that, but, you know, every guy should learn to cook for himself.
Yep.
Or so.
You know, one of my biggest regrets is when I grew up, girls cooked, guys worked on cars. My mom never taught me how to cook.
Oh, well, that's criminal. You should have learned to cook.
I should have learned.
You'd starve, Bill.
Well,
oh my goodness!
I've you know in succeeding years here, I've gotten to where I can whip up three or four dishes.
Yeah.
But the point is that
you should have been able to learn when you were young.
Exactly. I should have been able to learn when I was young.
Yeah.
My sister should have learned how to work on cars.
Exactly.
She should have learned that.
You know,
Dad
was taught these
things. Here's what
you know.
Yeah,
I was taught this kind of stuff. You know, there was no gender barrier growing up in my household. You know, my father taught me the things that he couldn't teach my brother. My brother's a criminal. Okay.
Oh, well.
But simply because he wasn't around or he wasn't interested. But,
sure.
Boy, if my dad said, you know, come on, I'm going to go work on the boat, boy, I was there.
Yep.
You know, come on, you know, we're going to go to the railroad. We're going to drive a train. I was gone.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's the kind of thing a man would take his son to do.
Yep.
You know, my husband is envious because he has a train thing. He loves these little toy trains.
Oh, yeah.
But
sure.
He's married to a woman who actually drove one.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I got to hang out in the freight yard.
Yeah.
Oh, it was wild. It was great.
And probably learned a little bit about, like, the freight business while you were at it.
Oh, sure. I knew how to ship something from our freight yard all the way to anywhere in the nation it needed to go.
Yep.
You know, and I was little. I was a small child. I was 5 years old.
Oh,
you know,
goodness.
But the things that, you know, just the exposure.
That had to be a thrill.
It was great. It was just one of those awesome things that you never forget. You know, and trains are pretty intimidating things.
Well, you know, they are. They're big and they're noisy and all of that kind of stuff.
It was great. And I went down there and I met people and I learned things and I saw how produce came and went and, you know, manufactured goods. And I saw the giant orange glow of the steel mills. And, you know, those things are absent now.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and as much as I would have loved to have taken my princess down there to see that, we drive by and I tell her. This is what it used to be like. It's a shame. And I tell her, you know, it's a shame I'm telling you how it is. I'd rather show you what it was like.
Exactly. Tammy, we got to go.
Yes.
We got a minute left to go. So I'm gonna say goodbye for now.
Thank you, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. I'm going to put on some bells. And we're going to listen to a little bit of music as we go head on out of here. Folks, become self-reliant. Don't count on your government to help you because they aren't there to help. They're there to enslave you.